This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. For the last 12 years, Michael Rice has been superintendent of Kalamazoo Public Schools. Soon, he will be moving on to his next challenge, state superintendent of public instruction in Michigan. The State Board of Education picked Rice from among three finalists after a second round of interviews earlier this month. Michael Rice, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
When you look back on 12 years, what would you say you're most proud of as KPS superintendent?
Oh, I don't know that I have a most proud. I have a lot of prouds. One of the things that I'm proud of is that we began a mentoring program 4 years ago, basically on a challenge. We wanted to improve graduation rates. We wanted to improve graduation rates for African-American males. I said I would be mentoring once a week. I challenged my male administrators to join me. Males in the district, subsequently females in the district to mentor our female students. Last year, 413 mentors mentored 1,168 students in 9,572 weekly mentoring sessions. That includes many of our mentors from the community. We're at 10,600 weekly mentoring sessions this year to date, notwithstanding the 12 snow days that we had. So I'm very, very proud of the mentoring because I think it's eye level. I think it's ground level with kids, and it's meeting kids where they are, where their needs are, what they require to help navigate the challenging childhoods that many of them have. I'm proud of our raising the graduation rate. When the president came in 2010 for us winning the Race to the Top Commencement Challenge, the graduation rate in the district was 63%, four-year rate. 8 years later, 2018, it was 75%, 12 percentage point increase in 8 years. The five-year graduation rate was 80.4% and only 2.8 percentage points below the state as a whole. We've increased our rolling three-year average for graduating in 4 and 5 years each of the last 7 years. African-American male graduation rate, which I cited earlier, which 2013 was 46.7%. We raised it 15 percentage points in 5 years. In 2018, our four-year African-American male graduation rate had risen to 61.5%, 15 percentage points above the 2013 rate. And for a five-year African-American male graduation rate, 66.5%, only 0.7% below the state. So I'm proud of all of those. I'm proud of the work we've done with the board. We've had a strong board over the dozen years that I've been here, a board that set long-term goals January of 2009, and we've made progress in all of those areas, reading, writing, math, advanced placement participation and success, graduation rates.
Specifically, what do you think brought up the graduation rates? Because, you know, 2010, that is the point, you know, a few years after the Kalamazoo promise. So it was more than the promise. What else was going on?
I think a lot of things were going on. You know, when we established our long-term goals in January of 2009, one of the things I said was, we will raise every single indicator in the district, every single major academic indicator in the district before we raise graduation rates. And the reason for that is it takes 18 years to create a high school graduate. And people say, well, come on, Michael, you only have them for 13, you only have them for 14, not 18 years. It's kind of hyperbolic. Well, actually, it's not hyperbolic, right? Because kids are developing in the womb. And even if they're not developing in the womb, and they certainly are, but even if you don't buy that, they're developing in the room once they come out of the womb. So it's really an 18-year process to develop a high school graduate. Now, schools only have the benefit of educating them the back 13 or 14 years, it's true. But that doesn't mean they aren't developing toward graduation or not in an 18-year period of time. So we raised reading and math and writing levels over a period of years, and the collective effort of raising the reading work, raising the writing, raising the math, the full-day pre-kindergarten, which we implemented in 2008, the expansion of pre-kindergarten, the lift up through literacy, parent education, family literacy programs in our community that have trained up thousands of parents and grandparents about how to work with kids around literacy, around school. I think all of those things were factors. Advanced placement participation success was a big deal as well. So we said in January of 2008, 1 year before we established those long-term goals, we said, we're going to be about advanced placement participation. We're going to encourage more kids to participate in AP, and not just middle-class white students. We appreciate middle-class white students being in AP classes, and we wanted more of them to participate. But we wanted traditionally underrepresented populations, African-American, economically disadvantaged, and Latino students to participate in AP classes. Last decade, 156% more kids taking AP courses, 226% more AP courses taken, and those numbers are bigger. The increases are bigger among traditionally underrepresented populations. So an increase of 313% for African-American kids, 402% for economically disadvantaged students, 1,212% increase for Latino students. And I think that collective consciousness raising around we can do better, we're able to do better, we must do better, and really driving that home with not only our students, but with our staff, with our parents, our grandparents, our partners. You know, we have 250-plus partners in our community, and we've worked hard to not only strengthen the relationships that we had 12 years ago, but also to expand upon those relationships as well. So take Communities and Schools of Kalamazoo, outstanding partner, has existed in the community for 20 years, predates me in the community, predates the promise in the community. When I arrived 2007, 2 years post-promise, Communities and Schools of Kalamazoo is in 9 of our 26 schools. It's now in 20 of our 26 schools. And there we have brilliant partners in our community. No partner is more integral than Communities and Schools of Kalamazoo. So we have worked to strengthen our partners as our partners have worked to strengthen us. Let me give you another example, that Loaves and Fishes, outstanding food distributor within our community, working on food insecurity in the community. We appreciated Ann Wen Lipsey's leadership in that regard. Appreciate Jen Johnson's leadership in that regard. We used to distribute food packs when we moved into the weekends at a number of our schools that had come from Loaves and Fishes. Well, we now have food pantries at 11 of our schools. And our families at some of our most socioeconomically challenged schools are able to come, are able to get some basics, take them home, have good meals. That has to have a benefit for our kids. So these great partner relationships, CIS of Kalamazoo, I cited before, Pam Kingery retiring after 20 years as executive director, great partnership, Loaves and Fishes, great partnership. We have 250 more great partners as well.
What do you wish you had done in these last 12 years, or maybe what do you wish you had done better or had the chance to complete?
Well, I'm not sure the job is ever over. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is never over. So, you know, the notion of completing is you're always in the midst of.
Is there a particular initiative, though, that maybe didn't come to fruition that you'd worked on and didn't happen as the way you wanted to?
Well, I can tell you some things that I think are important directions moving forward. They were areas that we began that I would hope. Don't know, but would hope that our strong senior staff that I've been fortunate enough to work with, strong board, strong staff and community, that I would hope that we would continue to work on. We've done some professional development in adverse childhood experiences or trauma-informed care, the understanding of what children come to our school with and not only who our children are, but better how to serve them when you can see that they're operating based on their experiences a number of which have been traumatic or which are currently traumatic. So I think that's an area of professional development we've begun. I'd like to see it broadened or expanded. We've done some professional development in restorative practices or restorative justice. I think there's some value, and we've talked about expanding upon that. Our ALICE training, Alert Lockdown Informed Counter Evacuate training, we've done it for virtually every staff member in the district. We're going to begin with students at Phoenix High School in a couple of weeks. That'll be our pilot with students practicing Alert Lockdown Informed Counter Evacuate, or minimally exposing children to it. Practicing is a little bit heavy, but certainly exposing our children to it. That will expand next year. So those are three areas of professional development that I would have enjoyed being a part of continuing and expanding upon, that we began them in the last year or two, would have liked to been able to see them through. But, you know, again, I think any year you're going to have some of those. We're going to have a new Phoenix in 14 months. Look forward to coming back for that ceremony. We're going to begin that capital project this summer. Four new classrooms and a gymnasium. That's going to be an outstanding moment. The largest project in the 2018 bond was the replacement of Edison Environmental Science Academy. And by the time we replace it, it will be just shy of 100 years old, which, Gordon, as you may realize, is just shy of the way I feel on a day-to-day basis. And that's going to be a signature moment in our community's history. You know, that sits right smack dab in the middle of the Edison neighborhood. You can imagine we're going to pull out the transportation center, and the transportation center is going over on Ravine Road. So that site will be greener. Number one, it'll be more environmentally friendly. Number two, brand new school in the midst of the Edison community, the way Washington Writers Academy, almost 100 years old when we replaced it in January 15, brand new school there. And so that's something that, you know, I don't necessarily need to have seen it to fruition, but that's something that will be exciting in the next few years, that partnership with the Boys and Girls Club as we build new on that site and green it up and pretty it up and make it a better place for our young people to learn and to grow, and our staff to teach and to grow.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. I'm speaking with Kalamazoo Public Schools Superintendent Michael Rice. He will soon become the state superintendent of public construction for the state of Michigan. We're looking back at his time in Kalamazoo as well as ahead to his next challenge.
Before we look ahead, I want to look back just a little bit to the beginning at Kalamazoo.
Sure.
When you were looking at this job from Clifton, New Jersey, how much did the Kalamazoo promise entice you?
Well, the promise was interesting because I wondered at the time, to what extent would that change conversations with children and with staff and with community members, parents and grandparents most specifically. I knew that the promise was post-graduation, that it wasn't an infusion of money during the school years, during pre-K-12, but I knew that it had the potential to change the way in which we did pre-K-12 and, by extension, what children would take away from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. When the promise began in, we were talking right before the broadcast. You noted a particular event in your life. Well, promise begins November of 05. June of 05, we graduate 454 children. June of 18, we graduate 692, 52% increase during that 13-year period of time. Now, it's true that our enrollment grew 25%, so we don't get credit for the first 25%, if you will, but we do get credit for the next 27%, and I think that's to the credit of our professional educators, our teachers, and administrators, but also to our support staff and our community members as well. We've all upped our game. When I was looking at this from Clifton, New Jersey, I thought, what are the conversations you could have with children and adults that could be game changers, that could change the trajectory of public education for our young people, and by extension, the trajectories, the life trajectories of our children? To what extent could you better prepare kids for their dreams? And I think notwithstanding certain headwinds that we've had, we've been cut in inflation-adjusted funding. I want to be clear about what that means. Nominally, our funding is up. But in terms of its buying power, our funding is down 20% since mid-2000, since basically the promise was announced. And so we've done this in spite of a more difficult Michigan merit curriculum that was passed by the state legislature right about the time that the promise was approved, just a few months after the promise was announced, in spite of having to cut millions of dollars from our budget, because in inflation-adjusted terms, our budget was pared back by more than 20%, our student achievement up in every major goal area. And that's to our credit. And I think that is in part a function of the promise. We're never going to be able to parse out perfectly the shares of responsibility, the shares of credit, if you will, the promise versus the staff versus the community versus individual children versus, you know, a thousand other elements of. What we know is that the promise helps change conversations with adults. We also know that it doesn't much help change conversations with five-year-olds. If you don't understand the concept of money, you don't understand the concept of what I think of as a little bit of a redundancy, but free money. You just can't understand. If you don't understand money, you can't understand not having to spend money and how extraordinary that is. For you as a student, for family. But as kids get older, they do understand money, and they do understand the notion that college is expensive, and they do understand the notion that your tuition is paid for. And that becomes a thing. We began many years ago kindergarten promise signing ceremonies. And some people kind of rolled their eyes, like, yeah, whatever, five-year-olds. What do they know? Well, they're young, it's true. But we don't just invite them to sign. We invite their parents to sign, or their grandparents, or their guardians, whoever's responsible for them. They most assuredly understand the value of money and, by extension, the value of the promise. And the more we get into mom's head, dad's head, grandma or grandpa's head, the fact that they are a part of this journey. You know, I talked about 18 years to raise up a high school graduate, and it took time to start moving that high school graduation rate, but that we've moved it 7 years in a row in terms of our rolling three-year averages. Well, we're making the case increasingly with mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, that what you do with your children, how you do it with your children, that all matters. You read or you don't. You talk to your child or you don't. You talk kindly to your child or you don't. You talk with a rich vocabulary or a relatively rich vocabulary or you don't. You talk primarily in terms of commands to your child or you speak in a gentler way. I mean, we have some of our families where, you know, when you're young, all you hear are orders, directives, commands. And we have other people raising their children in a very different way. Where kids are getting the opportunity to practice their speech, which helps them learn more vocabulary, which helps them develop an oral proficiency, which helps them with their comprehension, which helps them when they begin to approach text, because text is not simply your ability to decode, it's also your ability to bring your background to that text, your exposure to the text.
So what made the job of state superintendent appealing?
Well, so when I I think I mentioned to you too earlier that in 2015 when the position became open or when it was going to become open, that I didn't have an interest that
this is when Brian Whiston was actually hired in 2015.
That's correct. Yes, yeah. That's right. So it was raised with me at the time I was recruited. I said, look, I really just don't see that. The issues that you're dealing with the state, they're fine issues, but they're not my issues, and necessarily, and quite frankly, the issues that are important to me aren't ripe, and I'm not coming in with a wand. I wouldn't come in with a wand, and you can't force ripen issues. It takes time. Well, 2019, I feel it's different. Many of the issues that are important to me in public education, the adequacy and the equity of school funding, for example, four studies in the last 3 years have said we underfund school children. We had had precisely no studies ever in the state's history about the adequacy or the equity of the distribution of school funding. Not one, not a single one. And now we've had four. And they're across the aisle studies. So they're not studies by a political party or the other. There's a general agreement that we're underfunding public education. There's a general agreement, ripe issue, that early childhood education needs to be improved in the state of Michigan. Literacy, being able to read by the end of third grade, ripe issue, have to address that. And that's clearly something that has been raised to consciousness. Career and technical education. I think we understand as a state, business and educators, that we need to do better in terms of career and technical education. And then the last piece that I think is ripe, at least to me anyway, is the issue of, it's kind of the existential issue of the teacher shortage. And those of us who work to hire staff members on a regular basis. And I'm not talking about KPS, although yes, KPS, but I'm talking Lake Michigan to Lake Huron, the UP to the Indiana border. We're struggling to hire staff. Now, it's different in different districts. It's different for different types of teachers, there's no doubt. But across the state, we've got challenges. They're greater or lesser in different subject areas and in different locations. But we have an existential issue. And if we don't address this in the next decade, the profession has been denigrated, it's been chipped away at, it's been undermined. If we don't work on this the next decade or decade and a half to combat what's really happened to us as a profession the last decade or decade and a half, we're going to be in really profound trouble as a state. And the form of our education, when your children are having their children and when your grandchildren are in school, the form of education could change, not because the form of education should change, but rather because there aren't the requisite numbers of staff members, both quantity and quality, to educate our children. So those are five ripe issues that, in my view, weren't ripe in 2015 that made me interested in the position. And then I'll share one that isn't ripe, but that's still important, and that's social and emotional learning that I think needs to ripen and that we need to address at the state level.
So the state superintendent's one player here, but of course the state legislature passes laws.
Yes, sir.
The governor chooses whether or not to sign those into law. There, of course, are federal actions which also impact on education. There's local school boards which make the policy at the district level, and of course states, you know, superintendents at the local level as well. So how do you see the state superintendent fitting into that puzzle education-wise?
There's always room for another goat in a goat rodeo. And I think that I resemble that remark, quite frankly. I'm under no illusions that the system is a system that imbues a tremendous amount of authority in a state superintendent. But there's a fair bit of influence that a state superintendent has, number one. There are these ripe issues that present opportunities for us, number two. Number three, you have some people in significant positions who really want to do something with public education. You mentioned the governor, for example. I've not met a more pro-education governor in my career, not in Michigan, not in New Jersey, not in Indiana, not in Washington, D.C., not in New York, nowhere at all, ever. And though she is but one person, she's an important one person. I think the state legislature is increasingly aware that we have to improve public education. And I think anybody clear-sightedly could see that the efforts of the past several years, however well-intentioned, didn't necessarily generate the results that that were promised or were expected. So I think we collectively recognize that this is a moment. It's a generational moment in our state's history. I'm not going in there with any illusions that I come with a lot of authority, but I do think that I have a lot of opportunity to influence certain debates.
Okay, a couple quick things before we wrap up that were actually brought up to me by staff members, and they wanted me to present these to you. One of the things that someone asked me to ask you is how you remember people's names, because this person met you in a crowd of about 200 and said that, you know, her husband's is a teacher at KPS, and the next time you saw her, you remembered her name. Do you have some sort of system or something that you're able to remember names and faces?
You know, it's funny that you should ask me the question, because I don't happen to think I'm very good at it.
Oh.
And I've worked on it. I've worked on it hard. I don't think I'm particularly good at the physical remembrances. I'm really good with numbers, and I'm pretty good with words, too. I think I'm less good with faces. My daughters are both artistic. My wife is artistic. They see... they see shapes and colors and sizes in ways that I don't. So I've had to work on it, and I appreciate what your colleague is saying. Thank her for me, because it's not the way I see myself. So thank you. Yeah.
And then, is there a verse of poetry? I was told that one of the times you met the first time you met someone here at the station, you asked what was their favorite verse of poetry. And I thought I would ask you that, and maybe something that might be appropriate of the moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are lots of poems that I love. I mean, I have done third grade readings with children for 8 years. Mother to Son by Langston Hughes comes to mind. Well, Son, I'll Tell You. Life for Me Ain't Been No Crystal Stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor. Bare. But all the time I've been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set down the steps because you finds it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I still going, honey. I still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair. That's a poem that comes to mind. I share that with children because I think so many of our children are trying to make it through a thicket of challenges in childhood, and I want to give them something to grab onto that they can take with them on their journey. I May, I Might, I Must by Marianne Moore. You Tell Me Why the Fen Appears Impassable, and I'll Tell You Why I Think I Can Do It If I Try. Is another one that comes to mind. And then finally, the piece, which is reminiscent of the question that you asked me about unfinished business. You know, Frost, the woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep. So those are three that come immediately to mine, but there are probably a few other things rattling around in an old head.
Michael Rice is superintendent of Kalamazoo Public Schools. Soon he will be Michigan's state superintendent of public instruction. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You can subscribe to WMUK's West Southwest podcast through Apple iTunes and by searching for podcasts in Google Music. There you can leave a rating and write a review. WMUK's West Southwest can also be heard through our website, WMUK.org, and the WMUK app. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.